Welcome to the Scaling Through Structure podcast. I'm your host, Austin LaRoche, and we are here to learn about the winning systems that business leaders use to find success. If you believe in the power of organization, frameworks, and scalable processes, then this is the pod for you. Let's go. All right. Welcome back to Scaling Through Structure. I'm really pumped for today's episode. I've got Eric. Did I say it right? McHugh. Did I land it?
Yes, sir.
I'm always worried about screwing up the pronunciation on the name. I feel like you have an easy one though. So I'm not going to give myself too much of a pat on the back. How are you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing amazing. And honestly, Austin, thank you for having me. I'm really grateful.
Awesome. So you are the founder of ShopX.
Yeah, one of them. But again, titles are whatever.
I know. We were starting to talk about that, about the titles and what does it really mean. So why don't we start with ShopX and try to explain it to me like I'm a fifth grader, because it's definitely Web3 is really cool and exciting. But I got to say that some of our audience might not be as up to date with everything. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about it as a background, and then I'm excited to hear about the growth trajectory.
Sure. So I'm happy to talk about that. So what ShopX is, we help Web2 brands monetize in Web3. And I think I'm maybe the perfect person to describe that, because I spend most of my time talking to Web2 older executives who have no idea what Web3 is, nor do they particularly care. So I got this little pitch down pat. So to understand what Web3 is, I think it's really important to understand what Web1 is versus Web2 versus Web3. Although, to be honest, those are just names that are convenient that people just gave to sections of the internet retroactively. So we have Web1, Web2 versus Web3. So in Web1, the easiest way to think about it is read only. So you can go online, you can read stuff, which is fantastic because it helped really spread information. So that's useful in its own sense. The easiest way to frame Web2 is just think of social media like Instagram or Facebook. So you can read content, you can write content, but you don't own the content. So for example, if I'm on Instagram, I write myself an Instagram post. You as the reader, you can read it, you can interact with it, you can do whatever you will with it. But the issue is that Instagram owns it. So Instagram can, A, they can sell our data for nefarious purposes, or they can retroactively cancel us. So let's say I say something on this podcast that doesn't fly 10 years down the line, or my company or one of my, like a company I'm working with rivals Instagram, they're like, hey, enough of these guys, cancel us both. And then there's nothing we can do. So in Web3, and that's really important if you think of, so I think of content as it can be like pictures and whatnot, but I also think of money and currency as content. So people can just cancel people's money. That's also a no-go. So Web3 is important for that factor. But in Web3, you can think of read, write, and own. So not only can you read content, you can write content, but you own the content. So that content can either be a cryptocurrency or a NFT. An NFT is just, it stands for non-fungible token, which essentially is digital scarcity on the internet. The easiest way to think of an NFT is just think of it a piece of land in cyberspace. So let's say you own a piece of land in the real world. You own this plot of land, it's your land. You can do what you want with it. You can build a school, you can build a garden, you can do nothing. You can build a restaurant. Again, it's your land. So Web3 is, and NFT is the same concept. So you own a private piece of property in the internet and you can do what you want with it. My area of expertise is e-commerce, because ShopX helps brands enter the Web3 space. So if I'm working with a brand, they want to launch an NFT collection, they can launch an NFT collection without zero coding expertise. It's just filling out two simple forms. And then they can add e-commerce benefits to that NFT. So for example, if Nike were to launch a gold, silver, bronze style pass collection, and I call them passes just because you don't even need to know it's an NFT. It's a loyalty pass. The gold pass holders could get the product for free. The silver pass holders could get the product for 50% off. The bronze pass holders could get the product before everyone else. And because there's an NFT, there's a connection between the creator, in this case, the brand, and the consumer, in this case, the customer. So now Nike can continuously send value to the NFT holders, thus increasing customer loyalty, increasing customer retention, increasing conversion rates, and really getting that word of mouth marketing because of the customer ownership.
Wow. I've never heard it broken down like that. I really appreciate that. I think it makes a lot more sense, right? I think a lot of people hear NFTs and think of like their Xennial friends who have want the monkey NFT.
Oh my Jesus Christ. That's been the bane of my existence. Because imagine, like, for those of you who don't know, crypto's been in a bear market. So imagine talking to a Web2 executive, and this has happened multiple times. What is a NFT? And then you get the description. And so why do I care about a $500,000 monkey, and I'm just like, you probably don't. Oh, aren't like 95% of NFTs scams? I'm like, well, they probably are. So this is where ShopX differentiated our NFTs. So our an NFT is like a Bored Ape or just a monkey, usually hype based. So our NFTs are e-NFTs. So they're NFTs with e-commerce utility. You would buy the NFT or interact with the NFT because you want whatever benefit e-commerce utility that NFT would bring.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's interesting about the NFT world, because even going back to the bane of your existence, those some of those NFTs were a status symbol or perceived value. But what you said in the Nike example, that was really interesting. Can you give us other examples of where NFTs can actually be a really smart way for companies to be able to engage with their audience and provide them with value?
Yeah, no. And the name of the game is value. I love cryptocurrency because it incentivizes value creation on value extraction. So for ShopX, I can break down three examples. I can do the enterprise level, the mid-size one, and the small startup mom and pop style one, just because I think that gives a wide range of understanding. So our biggest client right now is probably Fox's new show, Krapopolis. So if you watch Rick and Morty, there's a show called Krapopolis. It's pretty funny. They have an NFT collection called the Crab Chickens. And if you and I own a crab chicken, so I get specific benefits for my crab chicken. So I can vote on stuff on the show. I get exclusive access to content. I get merchandise. My crab chicken may even show up in a TV episode, which would be pretty cool. So the cool thing about Fox's show is they launched their crab chicken collection prior to the release of the first episode. So prior to the release of the first episode, they were able to make millions of dollars, which, let's be real, don't get me wrong, millions of dollars is. I would love millions of dollars. I'm sure you would too, but to Fox, it's Fox. They have tons of money. But the important thing is they had a hardcore community who already invested time and money into the show prior to the release of their first episode. So their first episode actually had record numbers in terms of compared to other animations that they released. And this was because of the NFT community, because of the ownership, because people feel like they own part of the show. So going to the show, they're already hyped, they're excited. So that worked out well for Fox. I would say our mid-sized client, and my favorite one is the Mag Park, was actually our first launch. So they're in LA. So if you ever check out the Magnolia Park in Los Angeles, it's owned by a cool guy named Mickey. They sell cut like it's like a hyper hat store for the cool teenagers of like mid-20s. So like they'll sell like hats. There's a the vibe of the brand is like he's a hero type of guy, great guy, basketball hoop in the store where the kids come and play and all like that whole type of thing. So his biggest issue was whenever he released a hat, bots would come up. They'd purchase all the inventory in less than a second and then sell the hats and everything on the secondary market. The customer wouldn't get the product. He wouldn't get the sales. So no one was really happy. So what he did is he launched a gold, silver, bronze style pass collection. So he sold out 125 passes for his gold tier in less than 24 hours for 0.75 ETH. And so this completely solved his botting issue. So no bots have been able to break his system now because his hats are now token gated for his NFT holders. But the coolest thing about this is A, the price point. So 0.75 ETH is probably like $1,500 here right now. So for someone to want the, and his first NFT came with a hat. So for someone to want that NFT technology so badly, and keep in mind they're like 18, 21, 22-year-old person interested in like hyper hats. They're not like balling out by, well, some are, but most of them aren't balling out by any means. So they wanted the e-commerce utility. So they figure out how the NFT system worked, purchase that. And now that they have that NFT, there's a connection with him and Mickey. They get in real life events. They get to vote on designs. They get exclusive products. They get early access to pretty much all the products. It's a win for them. And my favorite stat about that case study is over 50% of the users who participated in that drop were 100% brand new to crypto. So that proved our thesis is, hey, if you want the e-commerce utility, you're going to learn how to use this tech. And they did. And now they're happy. And they're pretty, it's a, their Discord channel is pretty lit. Yeah, like they have specific sections for the NFT holders. Like they share memes, they share food. And it's pretty degen, but in a good way. I meant that as a compliment to Mickey, if you listen. And the third example, this is, I like this one too, just because this has to do the startup. So I've always enjoyed working with the long tail brands. My logic behind that is like the Foxes, the Nikes, they have tons of money, they have tons of resources. They'll get in, they can just brute force away just by throwing money at the problems. But for the smaller brands, we had this one customer, his name was Husky Jackson. He's a dog on Instagram. I personally like dogs. So if you like dogs yourself, check out Husky Jackson on Instagram. He had around 1,000, like 100K followers, and it's just Husky videos. Just brightens your day. So he had a community, but he didn't have a product yet. And he also has a full-time job. He just runs his dogs on Instagram. So prior to the release of his product, he launched his Husky Gold NFT Pass. people bought the pass prior to release his product, prior to the release of anything. He then had money, so in a start of fashion, he was able to use that capital to launch his store. So this proved his concept. And since he launched his store with a group of fan bases who already bought into his product, since when he launched the store, he already had people to sell to. And if you ever try to start an e-commerce brand, the hardest thing to do is get that first like 10, 20, 50, 100 loyal customers. And then it gets much easier from that. So he started his brand with that setup through his NFT pass. And again, like Mickey, like Fox, there's a specific place for the Husky Pack to chat. They talk dog stuff. I don't really know, but they do their thing.
I love those examples. And I think what I just learned a lot more about NFTs is the way to connect NFT with community. And
Yes.
all three of those examples, there is a community of people who have this shared feeling. And there is somebody on the brand side who wants to monetize, not necessarily as their first priority, but to really engage with an authentic community. I really felt that with the Magnolia example,
Yes.
right? I've driven down Fairfax. I see the lines
Oh,
for
nice.
all cool hip stores, and I know the sneaker culture. You buy them. You
Awesome.
see, there's a ton of resellers, and they're always searching for those people who love things as passionately as they do. And it's really cool to hear about NFT being able to bring people together. I love the idea of the Discord channel, but also I hear proof of concept too, right? I hear Husky Jackson going, does anybody actually, they like Husky videos, great,
Yeah.
but they actually buy something from my store. And that kind of being an easy way in, is that a fair assessment that it's an easy way to get started with e-commerce?
Yeah, no. So I think of Web3 as just it should be an additional stream of revenue for you. So when Husky Jackson launches a store, he does his normal thing. He does it like his ads. He optimizes his website. He does SEO and all that things. But he also has that Web3 angle. So it's just an additional stream of Web3 revenue that you can take advantage of if you want.
Okay. And so I like this like use of the NFT as like the your name on the list at the club, but not like the cool club, just like the club where like people like you are hanging out. How does scarcity come into play? Do these companies say we're going to give our first 100 people the gold pass and that's it? Where does that come into play? Because I know there's at least in the some of the early NFTs, I felt like there was an exclusivity feel to it. How does that work when you're going after a full community?
Yeah, so it really depends on the brand. So what ShopX is, we're technology. We enable brands to use NFT technology however they see fit. And the cool thing about where we're at in the NFT space is no one really knows what's going to work. So a bunch of people are trying a bunch of things and maybe some work, most will fail. But if something works, people can copy that, replicate that, recompose that, and make it work for themselves. So for the scarcity, that could play a factor. And again, this is one of the cool things about the NFT technology is let's use the Mag Park example. There's was Behind their brand, scarcity is important. They have limited drops, they have a limited community. They want their core fan base in that NFT. So let's say Magnolia Park becomes like the biggest brand in the world, the NFT, like it becomes Nike or Fear of God or whatever is in the hypewear store. That NFT should theoretically increase in price. So it's a way to share the success of the company with the customer who purchased the NFT as a way of support. And then the customer, because it went up in price, it's their NFT. They can sell it if they so choose for a profit. Then the Magnolia Park can program in royalties for themselves. So it takes care of that. But in terms of scarcity, we've seen brands use the product in different ways. So like the Magnolia Park scarce drop, you can play around with it. We've seen our conversion rates at around 80%, meaning 80% of the people who purchase your NFT are likely to purchase your product, which is really important when you consider the e-commerce conversion rate is roughly 1 to 2%. So as a startup, this really helps how much product to make. Because if you're a new startup, you're like, how much product to make? No idea. But if 80% of the NFT owners are probably going to sell it out, you can, like, let's say 500 NFTs, you can be like, okay, I'll make 400 products. Or you can even make 200 to guarantee a sellout, again, increasing that scarcity. But you can also, like, again, our software allows brands to use the technology how they see fit. So we can do most brands do like the gold, silver, bronze style pass collection. But we see brands like they create a pass for a one-time product, a one-time event. They can do that as well. So the scarcity matters if you're, I think it matters more. So if the brand itself cares about scarcity, and if you think, and if the and the price and the NFT is going to get continuous benefits, and I think having it scarce matters. But if it's a one and done type product, then scarcity is less important. It's more so to get the customer access to the product when they want it.
Okay. Thank you so much for all the background on all the things ShopX and what you do, and for explaining it in a way that That makes sense. Now I want to hear about the story. How did you get started in this? How have you structured ShopX? And what's been the growth path to getting where you are today?
Yeah, so in terms of overall story, just I think the why behind every company is very important. So my overall goal was to live a nice, peaceful life. I found that to be more difficult if I view the money system as corrupt, which sent me down researching like the Federal Reserve, like that whole rabbit hole, which eventually spat me out of physical gold and physical silver as answers. I'm like, okay. Then I became like a gold silver bug. But then that led me to Bitcoin as the solution to that, next version of that. And so ShopX is a way for me to onboard people into the ecosystem at scale without forcing everyone. So for example, the Fox Studio, like how many people see that NFT? How many people interact with that NFT? That's exposing Web3 and crypto to a lot of people. And if they want to enter the ecosystem and learn more about it, they can. Incentives are strong enough for them to do so, they can. So the overall structure of the company. So I believe that small teams, at least within tech, because it's scalable, it's remote. I think small remote teams work the best. When we started ShopX, we were out of a VC incubator. So we got that whole experience working with other startups. But pre-COVID, everyone just dispersed around the globe. So the structure of the company, I think the most important thing is, A, it's a powerful company, not a forceful company. So a forceful relationship is where one party loses, one party wins. That's not sustainable because if one party's losing, they'll eventually say, I'm done, and leave. Whereas powerful is where both parties win. So when we design a product for ShopX, we take account to every single person who's involved in the transaction and we make sure they win. So for example, with ReserveX, let's say Nike mints one pass for $100. The customer wins, they get benefits. Nike wins, they get revenue, customer loyalty. ShopX wins because we earn our revenue when they make a sale. Our community wins because we have an ambassador program that pays our community in Ethereum for whatever, for helping our ecosystem grow. So they get a portion of our revenue. Cryptocurrency wins as a whole because we're one of the few companies actually onboarding people into Web3 with real brands, with real products versus like hypeware monkeys. The world wins because I think cryptocurrency, it incentivizes value creation versus value extraction. Future generations win because the base incentive for people is value creation. People are going to try to produce as much value for other people as possible. That'll have exponential effects down the line. So that ethos is baked into pretty much all the products we make. Again, we have good intentions, so we're just out to help people. I think that just you need that to be successful as a company. But in terms of actual team structure, I would say around 5 to 10 works best. I like the minimalist approach. So just one person, expert in their field. And then if we need outsourcing help, we typically do that. So for example, we outsource some community help. A bunch of our communities volunteer and just say, hey, we want to help with the project, we support you. But like if we need to hire a third-party marketing agency, totally down to do dev work. When we integrate, so right now we're live on Shopify and WooCommerce. When we launched our WooCommerce integration, we did, and I think this is a successful way to do this, is one of our CTO, he played project manager for a third-party development studio that was recommended by WooCommerce, and that got that dev work done. So again, small teams working remotely, working nimbly and working agilely and learning from each other and just trying to help each other, I think is the way to go.
Nice. So tell me about the founders. You mentioned you had a CTO. Do you have a technical background? How did you guys come together, and who handles what, at least as much as you feel comfortable sharing?
Yeah, no, maybe. So CEO Osiris, his background is like Deloitte Consulting, all of that cool stuff. So he has a Deloitte e-commerce background and he's been in the space for a while. President, again, not that titles matter. I really want to stress that because I think titles are specifically at a startup are just okay, who cares? So my background is I founded a couple of SaaS platforms. I got VC funded. I used to work at Snap helping to craft their ad algorithm. And my last job before delving down the entrepreneur rabbit hole is I was a bankruptcy consultant, so that didn't align with the Bitcoin ethos. So that's why I quit that job and started trying to do my own thing. And our CTO he's in Korea right now. He has an anonymous, he's anonymous right now, but he's been working on smart contracts for so long. So between that, those core three are good. And then CMO was brought on after that. I think for a company to work well, you want to have your product and sales background down. So if you can create the product, great. If you can sell the product, great. And then after you get that's usually when you bring in the CMO and CFO. And then with that core group of people, that should be enough for people to run their own lanes, get their job done. But again, in startup world, like everyone's wearing many different hats. So you just play it by ear and see whatever works. When something works, you double down.
Nice. Yeah. And from a growth trajectory, I know my company, a lot of what we do is we drive leads for businesses when they're in a field, they're very well known, people are searching for what they have. But then more when you have a blue ocean product like you have, there's a lot more on that demand generation side, right? You've got to be able to build the demand and explain what you're doing, why it's the coolest thing on earth. So how have you structured your marketing efforts thus far to get your name out there?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question because so we have two ways to make revenue. So first off, brands, these are products, they make revenue. That's relatively simple. But we also have a ShopX tokenized software license. So our tokens, they're tokenized software licenses. And for brands to enter our ecosystem, they have to have a certain amount of licenses. But for SquadX members too, so everyday users, if they want to enter our ecosystem and earn Ethereum for helping our ecosystem grow, they can acquire tokens, they can stake them within SquadX, and then they could get paid for helping our ecosystem. It's a Web 2 and Web 3 approach from the brand side, typically attention. So I think we focused more on positioning. So right now we just got past the bear market. We're known as one of the leaders in Web 3 token gating, the RWA space. So a lot of our brands that we talk to and work with are actually inbound through referrals, through communities, through advisors. But if we ever need to, the typical, I hate to say it, but you can't beat the cold call when going through brands, like going through the email list, scraping the emails from a scraper, going down the company, just plugging in the HubSpot, putting in an email flow, optimizing that, getting on the phone, talking to these brands is a good way to do that. I personally, my favorite approach is using SquadX because we pay, like, keep in mind we pay ambassadors. So every time we make a mint, they win. So they're happy. So a lot of times they'll create UGC content on brand pages. Like, hey, you should use ShopX, create an authentic groundswell type movement. Then I take that Twitter post or whatever content they have, I go on LinkedIn and I reach out to their whole company saying, instead of saying, hey, do you want us to buy something? Hey, I can help you out with this. And they're more likely to respond from there. So in terms of Web3 marketing, so Web2 is that whole standard like SEO, getting the SEO down pat, paying for the sales staff to do their thing, creating cool content. In Web3 marketing, that's more of just like a KOL circuit. So like going on podcasts, creating entertaining content, talking with other projects via Twitter Spaces. So in that aspect, the name of the game is attention. And where we're at in the crypto bull market, I think we're perfectly positioned for everything just to go our favor.
Nice. No, that's really cool. And this community keeps coming back, right? We're building through a community. We're building a SquadX. Talk a little bit more about the SquadX and who they are and how people are interested, how they can join.
Yeah, so SquadX, it's the first ever blockchain-based ambassador program. So just think of X. So how Twitter or whatever. I'm going to call it Twitter because it's to me it's
No,
Twitter.
Twitter. We
Yeah.
only do Twitter on this show.
Yeah, good. We're aligned on that. It's like how Twitter paid its creators from their ad revenue. We pay our ambassador program. So we pay our SquadX community from our Reserve X revenue. And the whole concept behind that is it's better to give than receive. And I believe in energies. I think positive energy is contagious. I think negative energy is contagious. So as ShopX gets more and more brands get more and more mints, we're happy. They're getting paid more and more Ethereum. So they're happy. What do they do when they're happy? They start posting about it. They tell all their friends about it. Hey, check out the ShopX product. And we're one of the few crypto projects with a live product, with live revenue, with who's done anything right legally. So it's a good magnet for them. This increases the size of our community. As the size of our community increases, they get us more and more brands. They get us more and more attention. We live in an attention economy. We're an ecosystem-based product, so the more attention we have is good. So it creates a nice positive upward spiral. If you wanted to join SquadX, and just to be clear, it's an ambassador program that pays our ecosystem for helping our ecosystem grow. You can check out our website. It's squadx.co. It's from our, you can find it on our normal website. So shopx.co, go to squadx.co or check out our Twitter. So Twitter at ShopX Labs. It's linked there. But if you're really interested, the best thing to do is go to our Twitter, join our Discord, and ask our community what they think of the project. They're a bunch of degens in a good way. Like they'll be brutally honest. They think something's not working. They're the first to, they're fine. They have incentive to tell us. So they'll tell you what they think of the project organically and honestly, which I think is important. And everyone's going to recommend you do your own research too.
So I want to touch on cryptocurrency, and I say cryptocurrency because you used it multiple times in this interview as your belief in it as a currency, whereas I feel like a lot of people look at something like Bitcoin as an investment arm. I've looked at crypto as a place where I feel like there's sharks and minnows, and you guys are looking to get that stigma out, bring people in. And I think that's really cool. So for people who might be on the fence on crypto, talk to me about why we should be a little bit more bullish on it as a whole and where you think it might be headed.
Yeah, so in terms of crypto advice, nothing I say could be considered as financial advice. Sorry, dude. I just had to. I actually have to throw that in there. So I never advise people on what they should do with cryptocurrency. I can only tell you my train of thought, and if you resonate with it or it interests to you, that's great. So the reason I'm a big fan of cryptocurrency is I think it creates a, it. I think it incentivizes people for value creation. And what do I mean by that? Like I view money as neutral. I think there's good ways to make money, and I think there's bad ways to make money. If you produce a bunch of value for a lot of people and you become rich, fantastic. You'll probably use that money to produce more value. So that's good for everyone as a whole. But let's say hypothetically, I want to become rich right now without producing any value. How would I do this? I would place myself right next to the money printer, aka the Federal Reserve, extract as much as I can. And then I would give the money I'm able to extract. I give it to my friends through the form of government contracts, where it's like there was one recent one, and whatever you take of this, there's a bill that was passed. It was like $5 billion for electric car chargers. How many electric car chargers did they make? They made eight. And I'm sure those eight chargers didn't even work. So that's just a money laundering. That's clearly just money laundering. So with now that's happening, there's three corrupt people, or there's a corrupt group. The corrupt group, because they have access to unlimited money, they'll defeat the non-corrupt group. So now there's more, and there's the problem just escalates to what we have now. But in the Bitcoin cryptocurrency world, let's say I want your Bitcoin. First of all, I would love your Bitcoin. If you have Bitcoin and you want to send it over to me, feel free. How do I get your Bitcoin? I can't inflate it away. I can't take it from you. I have to produce something of value for you, and then you voluntarily give it to me. So if I want to make a lot of money in a Bitcoin world, the only real solution for me is to produce as much value as I possibly can for as many people as I possibly can. And this, if that's the mindset going forward, I think that's better. And this encourages authenticity too, because I think two things. I think God, the creator of the universe, I think they give us individual gifts. And I'm the best me in the world, you're the best you in the world. And I think people are happiest serving other people. So if I'm trying to make as much money as possible, which I am, how do I do this in a happy way? I try to serve as much people as I can. How do I effectively serve as much people as I can? I have to follow my intellectual curiosity because it's something I actually care about, something I'm actually passionate about. That's going to go bode well for everyone. So if everyone's operating in that mindset of abundance going forward, I think we're in for a better life. And I think Bitcoin is the core of that. Everything else is, again, sharks and minnows. Like, I think Bitcoin is king. I think Ethereum is around to stay. ShopX is doing our own thing in our e-commerce niche, where most are scams, but some are good. And it is just like in a blossoming space, it just works out that way.
Nice. No, I really like that. And I appreciate you bringing your passion into the world and making it better and providing more opportunities for others to be able to make money. So let's talk about you, Eric, the dude, the entrepreneur. How do you structure your day? How do you make sure that you take this passion and that you're spending your time wisely? Because we talked a lot about currency. I believe time is the most important currency that we have. How do you really make sure that you're optimizing your time in a way that is following those passion,
Yes.
that passion that you set forth?
Yeah, so time and energy, I think, are the most valuable things we have. So I'm quick to let things go. If something drains me, like if something's negative, if something's draining me, sorry, like I wish that person, that thing, that event the best, but I have no time or energy. I don't want to waste any time on negativity. I focus on the positive. So my days, I think it's pretty random, to be honest. So I have ShopX, but I'm also working on another company, which is Dotting, the first ever AI-powered matchmaking service. So it's a bunch of stuff going on for a bunch of both different companies. So what I do is I have a morning anchor and I have a nighttime anchor. My morning anchor is I wake up at 4:20 because I find that funny. That's when I do my meditation. Like I'm an avid med like I do tons of meditation. I think it's one of the most beneficial things you can do as a person. So I do my meditation in the morning, and when you do it in the morning, that's when most melatonin is in your system. So it is the best time to meditate. And I use that to set my intention for the day. I'm like, okay, this day's going to go well. Calls are going to go well. I'm going to help other people. Everything's going to go extremely well. And then I think that creates like a quantum collapse where everything does end up going well. So I do that. And right after that, I check like emails, do some community management, do all that whole stuff, respond to questions. And then from there, I gym. Like I try to be at the gym around like 5 because that's when it opens. Do my lift. I do a sauna. And then I come back home, I take my shower, my workday starts. And because I work with two different companies, like again, like both startups, so both many hats, like my goals are all over the place for one company, let alone two. So sometimes it's engineering, sometimes it's marketing, sometimes it's sales. So I don't really know what's going on. So I live by my calendar. I have an organized calendar where it's like someone books time, I show up, and then I figure it out. And that usually works. So if I need some like quiet time for a specific like engineering, like QA type of stuff, I'll book time on my own calendar. If I need to go on a walk, I'll book time on my own calendar. If I need to meditate, I'll do it. Like my time is my own. If I meditate or go on a walk, that's going to help me better serve the other team members, which better serves our customers, which is a win for everyone. So I think if you can do that in the middle of the day, go for it. And my nighttime anchor is I train Muay Thai. So that keeps me aligned at night. So if I'm training Muay Thai, if I let's say decide like right after this call for lunch, I just have a taste good but just bad for your lunch, I'll most likely get hit, which is good incentive to eat healthy and be online. So it keeps me on track throughout the day. And the cool thing about Muay Thai is it forces me to the present moment, so it gets me out of work mode. Because let's say I take a work problem, work opportunity into Muay Thai, and I'm thinking about it, then I usually just get hit, which is rather annoying. So it forces me to be present, focus on the Muay Thai. And after I leave that, it's one of the most intensive workouts you can have. So I sweat out all the stress, then I'm chilling. I usually have a healthy dinner, and then I usually read or something like on the weekday. Obviously, I'm not perfect, so I miss it sometimes, but I'll try to read something positive. And then I like to close the day with meditation as well to program my dreams. So if I meditate before bed, I can have some cool dreams, which I leverage to work throughout the day. So like a third of my dreams are pretty much lucid dreams. So you have a big win during the day. So yeah, I win, and you just carry on and just stacks on top of that. So I can have wins during dreams. I'm just like, I'm flying around, I'm hanging out with superheroes, I'm talking to philosophers, I'm playing chess, I have like Super Smash Bros. I live in Pokemon world. So I can take that energy from the dream and it carries on to the next day.
Wow, I have a lot of follow-ups,
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'm gonna limit it because we've got some we're getting close to time. I love the 2-a-day workouts. My gosh, what commitment. As a father of two, can I just say keep going as long as you can,
Oh
man.
yeah, bless you. The gym
Keep
time is
going as long as
sacred.
you can. They don't tell you about the time when the little ones start coming. But I want to talk about that relationship between meditation and sleep. I'm admittedly a terrible sleeper. My mind never stops. I get bad sleep anxiety. How can meditation help somebody like me stop getting my mind racing and start programming my dreams in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, so just think of it like a medit it's like a reset button. So where I learned, I went to a 10-day Vipassana meditation retreat, which is 10 full days, no phone, no nothing, wake up at 4, just meditate the whole day. It was the method that the Buddha used to reach enlightenment. So what you do is you first 3 days you focus your attention on the area around your nostril, you start to feel different sensations. And then from there you scan your body back and forth over and over again. And this is extracting the impurities, the traumas that you store throughout your lifetime. So during that meditation retreat, I was thinking of stuff since I was like 3, and just stuff that I've had, and like everything that I've stored up in my life just came out from there. So the best way I would think of meditation is think about your mind as like an email inbox. So if you don't meditate, your mind you probably never opened your email inbox throughout your whole life. So when you first open your email inbox, it's just a bunch of just like I call it the blah, where it's just like a bunch of because when I first started, you just get hit because you're forcing your brain to be still, and then it just starts thinking about stuff. So you just hit with a bunch of blah. But as you do it more progressively, as you get better and better in it, you start opening the emails, observing them, and then moving them on over and over again. And eventually, after time, you go through enough of the emails, your mind becomes stiller, it becomes calmer, and then just becomes more peaceful, which I think greatly helps with sleep. And it also helps with stress too. Like I don't really experience stress, which is super nice. But I'm also
Yeah.
not a father too, so.
No, it's interesting though. I don't know that I feel guilty a lot because going back to what you were talking about, like the bad energy and like just dropping it, like I've become a master delegator. Like if I don't want to do it, like I'm not going to do it.
That's
And
quite a bad agreement. Yeah, so.
yeah, and so I've done a good job at like eliminating a lot of that stress. I feel like I'm a good big picture thinker. And when I recognize that the system's good and the system's been good for a little bit, like I really take advantage of it. I take advantage of that time. I try and go on shorter but more trips with my kids and try to be able to experience and see the world. But then I do feel like I get this anxiety, particularly at night, which is just, and it just comes from having different types of sleep issues over the years of, oh crap. Let's see the classic example. Oh, if it's 2 o'clock now, so if I can lay my head down, I can get 4 hours, and then it's okay. What about now? 3 hours and 45 minutes. And there's that like that drive that I feel like and that I have a hard time turning off and getting to more of a zen I don't know, vibe, is that the right word, that you have seems amazing, but also a hell of a lot of work for somebody like me. How long did it take for you to really like dive in and get to where you are today?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. First of all, it was a hell of a lot of work. Like the 10-day meditation retreat, it sounds simple. You're sitting there for 10 days, but honestly, probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. But it's taken like years, and it's a progression type thing. It's like when the student is ready, the teacher approaches. The meditation retreat is what's kicked it off, but I've always been interested in that. But what really was beneficial for me in the learning experience was when I was at the VC incubator. So for your listeners, what an incubator is, essentially startup school. It's like early stage startups, they just work in like a building or whatever, desk by desk, close to us. And the startup next to us was the Liquid Death Mountain Water. So at that point in time, I was much younger. And so I'm young. I'm obviously going to leverage that experience. I'm going to try to network. I'm going to have lunch, go walks with as many CEOs in different fields as possible, which I did. So like having that experience and getting those tips from that many people, what worked for them, what didn't, and hearing their stories was, it was so very helpful. And at that point in time, I was like, I think I was more like the 12-hour, like I was there first, I left last, like the whole like 14-hour work days, you get up, you start working again, like you're always on. But I noticed, so when I would reach, and I think everyone's successful, I know that's some Zen bullshitty answer, but I view everyone as successful, but the people who are viewed as the more successful, because startup founders have multiple exits, who are further along in their companies, all of them had a spiritual practice. And there's one particular moment, like, oh, like, do you want to grab lunch? Or I'm like, yeah, I'll take all four. He's like, no, I can't grab lunch at the time. I'm meditating for this hour. And I'm like, what do you mean you're meditating? 2 p.m. on a Tuesday. How are you meditating? What's the point? No, this is when I meditate. It helps me. You do you. And that stuck with me. Because like before, I thought it was bullshit. I'm just like I would try before. But like, I'd sit there. I'd sit down. Like, I was meditating. Like a minute, and I was like, this is stupid. I need to check my phone. What am I doing? But that one was like, huh, maybe he's onto something. Obviously, I ignored it for a while, but I gave it more effort. Then certain content started appearing where I was like learning the benefits of it, like the science behind it. Okay, this is interesting. I gave it more of an honest effort. Like I actually sat down, started something called binaural beats, which are training wheels for me. It's two different headphones, different frequencies, so it forces you into a state. So that and guided help. And then when the Vipassana meditation retreat, which is what it's called, when my friend told me to do it, I obviously ignored it the first time. Like, I can't take 10 days off. That's crazy. What do you mean? No phone, no nothing. But then eventually, 6 months down the line, another trusted source who also happens to be really successful in the real world or in the world, he suggested this to him. Okay, that's the second person who's done this. Something's happening. I go on the site immediately. I sign up and then I get accepted and I just join without really even looking into it. So that was a complete surprise for me what I walked myself into, which was, I think, it was a way to go. I had no expectations. And it turned out to be one of the most beneficial things in my life because it makes you. So first off, I think of it, everything in energy, in terms of energy, frequency, vibration. So like, just like a radio station, if you're tuned to a certain station, you get that station. If you're sad, you're vibrating a certain frequency. That's what you attract sad people. Same with angry, same with peace, same with loving, same with helpful people. So what this does, it really resets the factory settings for me as a person. So now I generate positivity. So now when I'm talking to someone, I'm honestly wishing them the best. I hope you have a wonderful life. I hope you accomplish your goals. Like for you, for networking events, for at the gym. And since I started authentically having that mindset, I noticed that everyone wants to help me out too. Because if I go into a conversation, my goal is to be helpful. No, my goal is to be helpful to you. And then you can, that's how you really get business done. Where we're both trying to help each other. We're both trying to grow. Like no one's trying to like nickel and dime. You say, I get the upper hand. So that doesn't work. And here we are.
All right. You've now convinced me. I'm going on a leadership retreat this weekend, and it's mostly social, but part of it is we are going to have somebody come and teach us some form of meditation. I'm not sure what it is, but that part when I read the agenda was like, okay, sure. But I really appreciate your story, and I'm leaning in. Like it's the idea of going to bed every night and programming dreams and a third of those being lucid. That sounds
sick. It's like a first. Yeah.
A lot of work. I heard you, a lot of work, but still that sounds like an awesome goal to go after. So anyway, Eric, we've reached time. This was awesome. I had so much fun. I learned a ton. I think the listeners are going to learn a ton. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, dude, I had a blast. And honestly, dude, thank you so much for having me. And for your listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Truly appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Scaling Through Structure podcast. This pod was produced by Sabrina. If you liked what you heard, do us a favor and subscribe or leave a 5-star review on the platform of your choice. If you want to be a guest and share with the world your winning system, head over to podcast.atakinteractive.com/guest and fill out your information accordingly. To connect, send me an invite at www.linkedin.com/in/AustinLaRoche. That's AustinLaRoche. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners, but especially you. Until next time, I'm Austin LaRoche, and we will see you soon.